Miss McIntosh, my darling. Chapter 61, last part. To this poor mute maps in his grief, all time must seem no time, for he could not hear the noises of the city awakening us from a long sleep, just as he could not hear Mr. Spitzer's almost inaudible voice, scarcely above a whisper, just as he had not heard the voice of the frog singing in his mouth. And he could not hear so many things which Mr. Spitzer heard, even in the midst of the silence. Sounds of human voices, cries, music, the music of the falling rain, falling in winding sheets, bugling umbrellas in the driving rain, the turning planetary wheels, the traffic whistles seeming to come from far away, whinnings of centaurs and rose gardens behind picket fences, throbbings of city looms like great harps, harps like looms weaving this silence, silence of the moon at noon. For all that entered by the ear, all was dead, and it was a silent landscape, a city without sound, so that Mr. Spitzer, this ordinarily unenvious man for whom envy was the heart of life, could not help almost envying him when he thought of all the distractions, the discords, the alarms, the irritating buzzings, hummings, hammerings, ripplings of sounds, the muted mist, whistlings, roaring sounds of steam engines gathering up steam, sounds of cloudbursts upon a distant horizon, and icebergs singing like sheep driven to pasture by the winter wind, and wind blowing old papers along a dim sidewalk cracked like a pattern of mosaics, with water on either side, and many distant sounds which only Mr. Spitzer heard, a leaf falling on the other side of the world, noises like hailstones pelting the glass ear and the long roar of sound, and screaming of the great barnacle birds in the clouds, dull and wintry booings, as of a winter sea, or as of all things falling toward their end or their beginning, white rose petals winding like shrouds of snow in the winding wind, in the dark air. But the muted mist, all abstract conceptions and ideas for which there were no images, no nesting spider, hermit crab, wild rose, water wheel, swan, star expressing them. He had come closest to chaos through missing chaos, these swarms of sounds. He had missed music and law and conceptions of justice and the things which meant most or should have meant most to Mr. Spitzer, a silent musician with his musical manuscripts, whose vast compositions were still unexpressed, and were the inaudible music, the retired lawyer who, though he carried his briefcase, no longer spoke, for he had presented his last case in court and could not remember the decision, and the mute, as Mr. Spitzer could not help enviously thinking, often with a sigh like a whirring in the air, could sleep around the town clock and not be wakened by a sound. The whirling waters, the mocking birds, and the wild winds which awakened Mr. Spitzer with incessant roaring, whistling, for the mute had never heard the mouse's squeak in the chimney, the rustle of wind like water creeping, the cricket's song of the long winter, the crackling of a flame or a star. And if his eyes were closed, would be wrapped in a perpetual night, not knowing it was day. He could not know that it was day, that the night hawk had folded its wings, that the owl slept under the rafters. He would not hear the winter yellow legs warbling breathes through all the traffic's roar like the sound of the sea or a star off its beam. Probably, too, though he had missed much that was beautiful, he had missed much that was sad, the thin wild flurries of sound seeming to come from no source but sounds of the voiceless things or the thin wild sounds of icicles breaking in the wind, and he had missed much more. And he had missed much that was unimportant, much that was trivial, much that would be forgotten. There was some compensation for the silence shrouding him like the dead. And if Mr. Spitzer had shaken the world with his singing, if he had not been, as he was in fact, the taciturn musician incapable of expressing himself, made inarticulate by a sorrow older than life, older than hearing, older than the ear, if he had shaken heaven and earth and waters and clouds, if he had conducted with his wildly waving baton, his magical rod, the moon and the stars singing in a heavenly symphony in which was no discord, the mute would never have heard, his ears being dead as stones, it would never have heard of the eyeless cherubic forms in the clouds, suddenly awakening and spreading their butterfly wings huge as the sails of boats, had blown their glassy trumpets at the four corners of the clouded sky, the sky which was always overcast. Mr. Spitzer, in fact, darkly skeptical as to the future, just as he was dubious when he considered the dark plains of the past, past through which he had not lived, had only seemed to live, was not sure the silent mute would hear when the long waves washed over the corroded graves, when the graves gave up their dead, whether skulls as thin as paper horns or bodies clothed in illusory garments of mortal flesh, with long and flowing hair, with living ears, with bright eyes flashing in lights like aurora borealis. Would not something always be dead? Perhaps the ear, perhaps the eye, when all things came to life? Perhaps some great boom, bitter and washed up upon the broken rocks, or perhaps a dolphin with his eyelids closed in peace and his colors faded. Respis finin. Look to the end, Mr. Spitzer said, making the sign of the cross over the city. Should that not be added, which had never been? Should that be taken away, which never was? Should not only memory endure the stain of color, the echo of sound? Yet should it not also fade as a dolphin's rainbow colors fade, his being that rainbow which had upheld the dubious architecture? For what could the sounds of haunted music mean to this poor deaf mute who had not heard the human voice crying in this life, and who could not hear the sonorous traffic whistles at the riptide of the traffic where the crowds grew more dense, too deep, both men and whirling phantoms or shadows in the air? Could not hear the tumult, the roaring, the ripples of sounds and clatter of pebbles rolling, the leaves falling as if before the couriers of the storm, long after the storm had passed, when never again except in memory would the heavens be divided by thunder and lightning flashes cracking the sky, and who could not hear the leaves ebbing and falling as silently as the leaves over a grave in a forgotten place, or the silent footsteps making no sound, the tickings of stars like veiled clocks in the fog? What could warning notes and shrill cries and long-drawn sirens mean to him who was all his life like a stranger to this world, a traveler in a foreign country or many foreign countries, one who, in a hearing world, had no ears? Mr. Spitzer had felt quite elegiac over this mute, had wanted to compose a song in his memory, something with hoarse notes, sad and slow, and sudden accelerations like bird cries and faint ripples like moth whispers, and the sounds of moths scudding close to the cracked sidewalks in a pale twilight or dawn. Perhaps, though, they were butterflies white as snowflakes coming out of their dark cocoons, for he had almost forgotten the hour that the sunlight streaked the fog. Feeling quite disloyal, as if he anticipated an event which might never take place, he had begun to compose, in his own mind, an elegy for the dead deaf mute, though scarcely moving his lips, making no sound in memory of the whispering mute for fear someone might overhear. Yet who could hear him under the roar of the traffic, the comet streaming by as Mr. Spitzer moved his lips? For this world itself and all its postulates of sound, as Mr. Spitzer had noted, was to the deaf mute that foreign country through which he traveled forever on and on, scarcely noticing if he died. Scarcely noticing the forever fading borderlines, not knowing the signs, the directions, the traffic signals, the shrill traffic whistle like the memory of a star's whistle in the glassy light, not knowing the language of the people spoke, world of silence where he heard no sound, not even a wheel turning or a neighing horse or the loud boom of the bitter blown off its course by the wind or the loud wind blowing or lonely trumpet blowing on this dark shore of the silent silence, silent country of the silent waterfall silently falling from heaven to earth, silent country of the silent leaf falling before him, behind him, seldom arrested in its downward course. The silent language of the silent door slamming in the wind, or the silent dog barking at the silent star, or music, which should be heard only by the dead, perhaps not even then. The mute had never heard a woman's voice, a child crying. And Mr. Spitzer doubted that the dead should hear the music the living had not heard, for music was a memory of sound already faded or fading, sound like a faint gleaming in a cloud. Those ears were filled with roarings of sound, and it was the sound which deafened his ears. Yet silence was greater than sound, even as one star did not extend its margins through all the universe, but was lost in the everlasting fields of night, and night was greater than day. A momentary gleaming like the firefly seen by the blind man who was left with only one sliver of glass upon his eyeballs, when the windows of his eyes were shattered into crystal dust and sand. Perhaps if no one spoke, of course, and no one heard, if there was not a sound in all the world, it was already a silent world, and the mute had achieved his position among the many, had gone over to the great majority, was one with the eternal silence. And it was Mr. Spitzer who, as usual, was in the minority and was alone, the solitary listener who heard or what no one else heard. The musical sounds of musical illusions, his own muffled heartbeats like a living dirge for his dead heart, his own breathing slow and rasping and sad as if he knew this time were ending, his time were ending, or had already ended so that he lived now only by chance, forlorn chance like one who committed suicide and lived. Perhaps the mute silence was the silence of this world. Music was to the mute what the firefly was to the blind man, firefly's lantern or star's phosphorus path upon clouds with their pale plumes drifting being unknown to one who could not see light, not even that dim radiance sometimes seen by the man not absolutely blind, he who sees the starlight and nothing else, for it is as if his eyes are blinded by the starlight. Mr. Spitzer had known a blind man who could see only the starlight, had known a deaf man who could hear only factory whistles, and so Mr. Spitzer felt naturally that his music was lost, that his musical manuscripts were doomed, for he had sought out the deaf, or the deaf had sought him out of a great crowd, or he had been misled and deceived by a frog's hoarse voice speaking the Lord's Prayer, and sometimes by the blurred buzzings of striped bees. Gold-striped bees in the opalescent winter fog, and sometimes by singing sails or sails at a far horizon beyond the falling water, and sometimes by angelic choirs with their heads peaked with snow, even like an alpine range. And that he should have sought the silence was a fact a musician must necessarily ponder on, asking why had he attracted a mute, a man with ears of stone, even though, of course, with so many door keys on his person, and some which would open no doors, or doors of which he had forgotten the numbers. Mr. Spitzer might seem almost magnetized, one who might attract a star or be attracted by a star if it were of greater magnitude, greater spatial quality than he who was like a fixed star of a lesser magnitude, burning with that degree of dim brightness which made him scarcely visible in the pale silver air. He might be drawn by a polar star, drawn like the cart by the horse, the old milk-white horse with his bones showing through its mottled skin, and its moon blindness which caused its stumbling walk. Perhaps the mute had been attracted by Mr. Spitzer's mollusk psychology, his secretiveness, his withdrawal from life as if he had withdrawn inside his mother-of-pearl seashell, his silence like that of one already dead, merely remembering the muted music of the sea, the wild sea. Indeed, Mr. Spitzer was so torpid, so slow and stumbling of his walk, as he measured his paces with his cane or timed himself with his wristwatch. He had timed himself and did not average, even when not walking in opposition to the wind, not walking in the eye of the wind more than 12 knots a day, made less when he was in the wind's way and blown from starboard in starless night to larboard in torrents of rain, his longest journey probably being, as he had ascertained, often checking the same as, if meeting with no obstacle, probably the longest journey of a pedestrian seashell scraping along the shore. The pace of a seashell walking through the wave-streaked sand rippling with ribbons of light, going from one place to another as the crystal sand blew and the dunes themselves seemed to move in the wind. And no one knew how far a seashell had journeyed before it reached this shore, how many seas it had traversed, how many shores it had already reached or would reach, whether it had already rolled on a China beach or jade beach-strewn pagodas moving when the flood moved. Mr. Spitzer, who believed that, though once an amateur in this realm, he had acquired enough knowledge of seashells to be the great conchologist, knew that Pacific seashells were sometimes found on this Atlantic coast, some had rounded the Cape of Good Hope, some had rounded Cape Horn, some had followed the same path as New England schooners returning from the China Sea or from the Arctic Flood or from the Southern Pole. Whalers and brigantines of the opium trade and of the spice routes and of the silk routes plowing the waves. Ships from the Barbary Coast and Labrador Coast and the Drowned Islands and the shores of nowhere. Ships followed by glass-nosed dolphins in the wake of the waves streaming like curls and followed by seashells, and there were seashells always drifting downward. Seashells of the Arctic regions drifting like the great Arctic birds who round this globe each year, going from pole to pole, seashells of the frozen northern cap drifting to the frozen Antarctic, and sometimes pulverized by friction of waves and wind before they reach their journey's end, there being no seashells at either end, jewel box seashell and left-handed strom and winged strom, and babyfoot and bird's egg and rose and phaeton and hawk's wing and great albatross's wing and angel's feathers, drifting downward even like the migratory birds going south. Like the great barnacle birds navigating through seas of clouds, even like the sediments of the stardust or stars settling in the southern heavens, or like the mountains of the moon drifting downward to the moon's southern pole, seashells are found on the mountain tops and in the deserts of stone or snow or burning sand. He had heard of seashells big as Arabs' tents. He had seen seashells big as the minarets of oriental cities gleaming above a sea of clouds. Seashell on the shores of heaven, and his own head, did it not roar like a demented seashell remembering that sea which never was? His breathing was his longing, his aspiration causing the air to move in a gentle motion. His music was merely a psychological process of breathing, he had come to have little doubt. His inhaling and exhaling air, and nothing of which to be proud, for he would have been prouder if he had ceased to breathe, to live, if he did not feel the wind scraping the musical box of his ribs or the bird of music crying in this cage of his bones. He would have been prouder, no doubt, if he had been without breath and not always stopping for breath. And hence dead, dead by his definition of death. If no bellows had blown a spark or firefly, or showers of sparks like the phoenix burning in the cloud, or if he had been wrapped in his period of hibernation through many moons and starless nights, then why should he have sung, even in his sleep? Why should he have spent his life addressing his remarks to a stranger who could not hear a word? For though Mr. Spitzer addressed his remarks sometimes to another and sometimes to himself, almost a stranger to himself, it seemed to him, And though he spoke with the tongues of angels and of men, or tongues of water, or tongues of grass, tongues of the wild beasts, tongues of the birds, tongues of stone, the mute had not heard or answered, no more than he would hear Mr. Spitzer's susurrus, which was all his music now, or hear the dim thrumming of the city traffic as the business of the day began here at the hub, multiplicity of tritons blowing their distant spiral horns upon the ways of the city, or the cries of rickshaw boys in Peking, or the honkings of cranes or bicycle wheels turning through reflective clouds. For all was a diminution of chaos, and there was no pattern but the music of the sighing wind, or Mr. Spitzer's music timed to the necessity of his breathing, his stops to indicate the closing of an aperture in an air passage, or the pressure of a finger on a string, a pulse, his sudden trills, spills when he relieved, a white sail, black sail, from the presence of the wind, sudden squalls like the waves blowing past his ears, his music, who could ever deny this, for who had ever heard it? Was his life, his death, something which only he might hear, for the mute had not heard the sound of a bow scraping a string in the trembling sun-streaked fog, kite string, puppet string, shuttle music weaving between two stars, or the long slurring of the bow over the string, one slur prolonged forever like the music of the haunted silence trembling with this breath. The mute did not hear this rasping breath like the sound of a door closing on rusted hinges, Crete hermit mollusk door swinging in the winter wind, this whisper of mutes. Or these phaetons drawn by white horses rolling on and on, or these starfish scraping across a glassy shore at the edge of the mundane world. If he had heard, he gave no sign. Perhaps all meanings could be expressed by one word, a long-drawn zzzz. Mr. Spitzer somnolently thought, feeling his heavy eyelids droop, hearing a long-drawn zzzz under the traffic's meteoric roar and wondering what it meant. Wondering if the mute also heard the stars buzzing like the bees, though the stars had faded from the glassy sky, still trembling with spots of reflected light. But apparently Mr. Spitzer had heard what the mute had not heard, for it seemed that no human voice or stellar sign had interrupted his profound silence, even here at the surface of life. And Mr. Spitzer, unlike the seashell writing his music on the strand, might as well not have written his musical signs, for they were sometimes unintelligible even to him, with his fastidious care and sense of the exquisite, his precise imprecisions and his imprecise precisions and blurrings of musical effects and his tonal memories and his music-freighted silences heavy with sounds unheard, causing him to tilt, to turn, to drift, perhaps because he was forgetful of that which he had intended by his largo and his presto, his allegro or mournful music or mournful whistle, bicycle whistle, bird whistle, remembering with greater clarity, in fact, what he had not intended. For all that he had not intended, it was clear to him, clear as a dream he had not dreamed, a moment he had not experienced. And so what could this ambivalent musical signs mean to another man, or to the deaf interpreter, or even to Mr. Spitzer, who forgot from moment to mortal moment the music he had immortalized? He forgot whether he was the creator or the creation which should perilously endure. How ironical that the creator should forget the creation, windows and doors, or that there should be no creation but the creator, or that there should be no creator but the creation. Half should always be omitted, Mr. Spitzer thought, perhaps less than half, perhaps more than half. As to which there should be, he was never quite clear, though rather leaning toward the starboard side. He was rather leaning toward the densities of the stars which should omit him, this mournful musician wearing the white rose in the cloud and the white glove and the black cape, like the boom of a jib sail flying in the wind. Perhaps even if not meaning to do so, he had already omitted himself. It was merely, as he had many times remarked, his shadow here, his shadow, and the mute. Was it for him, the silent being who seemed withdrawn inside himself, that Mr. Spitzer had been composing silent music all his life? And was the mute the ideal audience for those musical notations Mr. Spitzer wrote with such prodigality that he was often amazed by the great undertow of the silence? Writing wherever he could find a blank space for his musical arabesques, the scores which he inscribed with spidery precision upon his starched white shirt, front or the white cuff of a sleeve, or his black bordered handkerchief, big as a railway signal flag. For the engineer who was deaf and blind, or his crumpled calling cards, or marble tabletops in public restaurants, or paper lace napkins like the snowflakes falling, or the backs of old court calendars, old bills of exchange, bills of lading, bills of sale, lists of shippings, or crumbling city walls, or the sands of the sea before the tides came in. Sometimes forgetting his music or where he had written it, scattering his musical manuscripts all over Boston, sometimes Philadelphia, and sometimes Trenton, Camden, Ashbury Park, so surely, though ignored by music chamber hounds and other audiences, must be known by janitors at railway stations and many street cleaners and many beachcombers and the old men sweeping away the autumn leaves, their rooms in the public park.